Once again, the Lime Leaf podcast takes to the ether. Welcome. This is a show about building a better Ethernet. I'm going to start over. Building a better Ethernet.
It's part of the internet. I don't think we need to cut this. It's fine.
No, okay. Welcome once again to the Lime Leaf podcast. This is a show about building a better internet through open source, open standards, and worker ownership. We're your hosts, Blaine Mubbs and me, John. Hello, fellas.
Morning.
Hello.
We own Lime Leaf, a tech co-op specializing in software solutions and consulting for values-driven organizations. We also run Blue Sky Directory, a collection of all things related to the Blue Sky social media platform and the app protocol technology that it is built on. You can browse millions of Blue Sky profiles, starter packs, feeds, labelers, and tools that help you get the most out of your Blue Sky experience at blueskydirectory.com. You can also subscribe to our weekly Blue Sky newsletter. So in this episode, this month, we're going to talk about 2025, do a bit of a retrospective. It's just the three of us. No guests this month. Eric is doing actual work, so he can't be with us today. It was a very busy year for our little co-op, so we wanted to share some highlights and talk about our aspirations for 2026. So let's get started. I think the first thing that we'd like to talk about, or at least I would, is Blue Sky Directory and Mubs joining us. I think that was, for me anyway, kind of the highlight of the year. So what is Blue Sky Directory? As I said in the intro, it's a directory of all kinds of things related to Blue Sky, which is a social network that has gotten a lot of attention in the last year. People have very strong opinions about it. We like it, but we also are more interested in the technology that powers it, which is called AT protocol, AT protocol. Different people pronounce it different ways. See our earlier podcast episode where we interviewed Boris Mann about all this stuff. Very knowledgeable guy. So, Mubs, if you want to just give a little, just short background about like why you built it.
Yeah, I think it's last October, I started using Blue Sky a little bit more, and you know, decided I wanted to stop using Twitter X, whatever it was called back then. It was around the time of the election last year, and there was a lot of interest in alternative platforms, but it was still very new. There wasn't a lot of information out there in terms of what alternative clients you can use, what tools are out there. Starter packs were the craze in terms of who do you follow once you arrive on the platform. So originally it started as just a way for like somebody new to Blue Sky, what should you do once you arrive there, you know, who do you follow, what tools can you use, things like that. So I just kind of built a very simple little directory that kind of listed those things, and then over time that just kind of morphed into more of a deep dive into the protocol side. So we're using the sort of app protocol feeds to kind of power a lot of the content that's on the directory itself. That's obviously the one of the nice things. Everybody gets, as you say, everybody who wants access to the fire hose from the app protocol servers can. There's no restrictions on that, and you know, you can do what you want with the data because it's all open and public.
Yeah, so you know, when you said that you wanted to join the co-op, we were obviously very excited to have you, but also this, as they say in the business, asset, which, to be clear, like this thing gets like 8,000 visits a day, roughly something. I mean, it gets decent traffic, yep. Certainly more than the other things that we've built. So, you know, and just the growth in the last year of it. I mean, when you first started it, you went from zero to pretty decent traffic pretty quickly. The newsletter now is over 4,200 subscribers, basically. So, you know, this is something that we want to build on and, you know, expand more into open social stuff. We'll talk about that a little bit later. But yeah, I think it's a pretty impressive thing that, you know, in a little over a year, you've built this thing that is not only a great asset for us and all this traffic, but it's now the official Blue Sky So the actual Blue Sky, the company, which is a public benefit corporation, they own and operate Blue Sky, the social network, the app, all that stuff. They basically came to us and said, "We like this thing. We're trying to do something similar on the Blue Sky developer site, but we, would prefer to use your thing and invest in other things." So they're now Blue Sky links to the Blue Sky directory as the resource that they recommend for finding cool stuff related to Blue Sky. So that's been pretty cool as well, and gets us more, I think, plugged into the app protocol world. And there's just so much stuff going on there, and has, the last 6 months, just the number of products and things that people are starting to build on top of that protocol is pretty cool. So, in addition to that, like you said, we have a company called Graze, using our API. They're building all kinds of stuff. One of the things they're building is kind of, feed creation tool, but they've also now just launched a, I mean, I don't want to put words in their mouth, but it's kind of a Patreon thing where you can, directly support creators on at protocol with like real money using the payment system from Graze. But anyway, there's just so much going on with Blue Sky Directory, but the other things that we want to do
I think
with social.
that's the thing that kind of has had me excited and has kept me excited, is that there's lots of interest, lots of activity in the short term in terms of, lots of people joining. I think Blue Sky itself is up over 40 million accounts now. And hopefully that'll continue to increase. So in the short term, there's a lot of interest, but it feels like Blue Sky itself is building for the long term. It's not just this high big spike that's just gonna wither away. They're kind of putting all the pieces in place to build a long-term sustainable platform. And so from an asset perspective, in terms of us building an asset that has kind of value long term, that to me is also something that was important. I didn't want to just, be a part of something that was just part of a hype cycle kind of thing, but actually has an asset that will continue to be valuable for a long time. Because from the co-op side, at least, I didn't want something that was just going to be that was going to burn really hot for a short amount of time and then kind of fade away. So I'd much rather build something that is sustainable and will be around for a long time, and that we can continue to kind of improve sort of over the long haul as well.
For sure. Yeah, I think for 26, we definitely want to do more in the app protocol world. It seems like every idea that I've had for a app protocol based product, a day later someone else announces that they've built it. It's moving so fast. It's really crazy. Yeah, Blue Sky Directory, very exciting. Lots happening there. I think the other probably highlight of the year was Apply. So apply.coop is a today it's a job board for values driven workplaces, organizations. So co-ops, nonprofits, public benefit corporations. The idea was that, they would post jobs there, and then job seekers would find those jobs through apply.coop, and we would link to, place where they could contact the employer or apply directly through that employer's website. So what we're doing literally today, probably Monday, because I have to review the PR, but is we're gonna change it. It's now gonna be a directory. So sticking with the directory theme, so it's gonna be a directory of values-driven workplaces. I mean, the more we, and I think one of the valuable things about apply.coop was we learned a lot building it. First of all, that we, could work together and build something and do it quickly. I think all four of us in the co-op have pretty similar philosophies about building software and not overbuilding it and making it good enough. All these things are embodied in apply.coop. What we are not good at is marketing things. So I think if we would have, we don't have a marketing person here, and hiring someone to do that, you know, I think we just promoting it was where we at least me anyway, fell a bit short. I just didn't, you know, the beginning we had spread the word, a lot of people talking about it in the co-op movement, but then from there, it just takes a lot of time and energy to get, and I'll write a little bit about this in a blog post next week, just the chicken and egg problem of site visitors versus people that will pay to put stuff on a site without visitors are zero. So anyway.
I was just going to say though, I mean, it's also worth keeping in mind that the for nonprofit, the sort of the environment has changed a lot. You know, a lot of these organizations had their funding cut from the government and other places and things like that. So they seem to be doing less hiring as it is. So I mean, although we could have done a better job of spreading the word and marketing and stuff like that, I think we're also in a bad market for what Apply is trying to do. Like, there's just not as many people hiring kind of in this space. So it's very hard to build a tool like this in a market like this.
Yeah. That's why we sort of, And that's why we sort of like fell back into like a more of a directory. At least we wanted to give exposure to those companies that like they exist, especially for folks that have been affected by this terrible job market. They're like, I don't want to go work for somebody else like that again. What are my other options? So at least it's still up and running to list a bunch of those workplaces, co-ops, nonprofits, PBCs. And then you can still go explore those companies yourself. So we might get back to the actual job board if things sort of get a little bit better. But for right now, it costs us pennies to run this thing. There's no point in like shutting it down. It's all open source too. So it's, like I said, it's more of the, like the marketing and stuff, that's the big effort. Like it could just sit there and run forever, and we'll take suggestions from folks if we're missing a workplace that's not there. We'll just add it quickly.
Yeah, when we first launched it, like we were the ones just to seed, you know, the site. Like we were the ones putting the jobs on there, and you know, and as I kept doing that over, you know, through the summer and into September, like it's like there just aren't, these places don't have any jobs anymore. The job listings, they just sort of started going away. And I think the overall market, but also like you said, Mubs, like just how these places get their funding changed drastically. So yeah, it was a confluence of things that, you know, just had to shift it. And I think it is a good shift. And like you said, Blaine, like someday, maybe we'll start doing job listings again. It's just a hard thing, not only because of the market, but, you know, as I was researching like APIs for, there's just no real standards around like job listing formats or APIs. It's a lot of paid APIs. They're very expensive. I looked at, you know, for a few from major tech companies, and it was absurd how much money they charge for them. At least absurd in my opinion. Obviously someone's paying them those prices, but we weren't going to pay, you know, hundreds of dollars a day.
The greenhouses, the bamboos, all those ATS platforms, those,
and the Googles,
And LinkedIn, forget it. Like, there's no way there. I don't even think there's really an API to get like there is, jobs from LinkedIn. So that was like all the sources that would make sense to even automate this stuff was just more trouble than what it was worth.
Yeah. So I think, I'm glad we did it. We learned a lot. I still think it's a cool thing, and I think it could be. You know, we're obviously not going to disrupt the greenhouses of the world, but I think it could grow into something that, you know, becomes kind of the hub for the kind of organizations that we want to work with to, you know, hire people through that. All these things take time. That's the other advantage of having as much experience. In other words, being as old as we are, is that, you know, we're willing to be patient with this stuff because we've been doing it a long time and we know it takes time. And we don't want to raise a bunch of money and, you know, burn through it in a year and all those things. So, all right. So, contract revenue. So that's how we make most of the money we're making now, is through software contracts. So I think the cool thing for me in 25 is, you know, more of those contracts are with people that, you know, have always been our goal to work with, like other co-ops, you know, worker ownership, worker rights people. So I think, you know, the major ones that I think we want to talk about are Source Co-op, Works Printing, and then Means Media. So Source Co-op is, well, Blaine, how would you describe it? It's a data thing.
It's a data. Yeah, it's a it's effectively a public data repository of research data, sort of all that public data that deserves to be public domain. Yep. And they got a little bit more notoriety like when the current administration started ripping down a bunch of the data sets from data.gov. What they did is they ended up like taking copies of that and working with other institutions to store and list their data sets publicly. So it's kind of, you know, kind of like a GitHub for data kind of platform. And so they run the public website. You can go to it. It's source.coop. You can sign in and look at the public data sets and you know, things like that. And they just sort of like said, it's just a data warehouse of stuff. So they have this like internal, they have the public websites themselves, but then they have a proxy service, which basically acts as a front to their data files sitting in their cloud. So that has all of the permissions and passwords and things like that to ensure, you know, the folks that can actually download the data can download the data. And that's open source. And they came to us and they asked us if we could do an initial audit and then potentially help them like re-architect it a little bit to, you know, add some different features and stuff later on. And that proxy itself is written in Rust. And so the neat thing about this or this partnership was they came to us. Like they found us. And I think it was, yep, LinkedIn, and then it was like we ended up interacting with them on social.coop, the Mastodon instance, which was neat. Mm-hmm. And so we entered into a short-term, you know, contract to just sort of like audit everything first and just like give them some ideas and just to work with them and figure out what their goals were like into the next year once they get sort of additional funding. And it's been a great, like, partnership for us, you know, understanding their needs and, you know, getting to do some Rust for them. We just recently added, it's not out there yet, but we added some open telemetry tracing so they can understand what their slow points are and, you know, where they can improve the different stuff. And there's some sort of larger goals that they wanted to add as well that, you know, hopefully we'll be able to continue the partnership into next year.
Yeah, they're very cool. very, very nice people.
Yeah.
They also podcast, by the way. It's called Great Data Products. They get very, very deep into data nerdery. it's pretty cool. So Works Printing is a printing vendor. They'll print your T-shirts, your any kind of swag you want. They're worker owned. They're based in Worcester, Massachusetts. And that's a partnership between us and our friends at comp.coop. They brought us into that. You know, just building out a system. You know, they do a lot of they did a lot of customers and a lot of print jobs, all this stuff. So anyway, there's just systems that have to coordinate all that, and we're, I guess you'd say, helping to improve their operations. Is that an accurate depiction, Wayne?
Yeah, it's an operational like inventory order management system in the background. You know, they have their own print shops, like literal like print presses and things, and they have those digital systems which then interact with other online systems for placing those orders. And they need to coordinate all of that order data and inventory data into like a canonical like source of truth system. And they, they're working on an initiative that they want to be just a little bit better at that stuff so they can manage it much easier. But I won't go into details of what that initiative is, but it's benefits for everybody around that that's involved in the printing, ordering, designing process. So we're helping them build that out for them in part, like I said, in partnership with Comp.coop, who's mostly running the project, like customer facing stuff. But we're doing some of the back end internals, APIs and data ingestion and database stuff.
Yeah, they're also very, very nice people. They do, most, if not all, the merch for like AOC and some other, progressively minded folks. So the other cool one is Means Media. They are the people behind Means TV, Means Morning TV. So Means.TV, it's, I guess, they would describe themselves as an anti-capitalist media company. I guess I don't want to go too, I guess, too far into what we did for them. It was sort of security related, so I'm not sure if they would want us necessarily talking about it. But they're really, really cool people. They're really interesting. They were good to work with. I hope that we work more with them because what they're doing is pretty cool. So you can check them out. And then other things that I mean, most of the other ones we are under like NDAs with them, so we can't mention them by name. But the most prominent one that you've worked on, Blaine. I don't know how much you want to describe about.
Yeah, at a high level, it's basically leveraging the AWS IoT product to manage and handle the data from this company's embedded devices. So they have these embedded devices that are recording a bunch of data. They not only need to manage those devices by ID and connectivity and security and stuff like that, but they also need to then take the embedded data that is being produced and get it into the cloud and get it into S3 and then pull it in a database, decode it, plot it in graphs on a web portal for customers to see that. So part of what we did for them was like that whole infrastructure setup, and then we built a dashboard for them and their customers that could log in, see the data that's been uploaded, see the device states, whether it's on, off, battery power, all that kind of stuff. And then obviously what the data was produced and plotted, with some machine learning that we work with on their end. Some of those folks are, data scientists and machine ML scientists and stuff too. So that's been a fairly long-term interesting product, which will probably extend into 2026. So it's been a really great arrangement. It's very, very cool stuff.
So I think those are most of the customer things. The partnerships of we already talked about comp.coop. And then we're also partners with a co-op in Argentina called Ferox. They also do custom contract software development, primarily Elixir, Go, Rust, so, similar things to what we do. The major project we're working on with them is for Panther Peak Studio, building a connected TV kind of media delivery platform. I think Neil at Panther Peak would call it a video monetization platform. So there's a whole advertising aspect to it, but so that's been cool to work with them. And just to get perspective of, something outside of the United States. All right. So from there, looking forward, so worker ownership, that's kind of one of the most important reasons why we started this co-op is not only that we wanted to own our own company and have, control over where it goes, what kind of work it does, but there's just a larger movement towards worker ownership in tech. I think, given everything that's happened in 2025, the layoffs, the just tech companies turning into really terrible, what we consider, I should just say, we're biased because we kind of lean a bit left here. They just have become really terrible actors and doing really awful stuff, not just with AI, but all kinds of things. And I think a lot of people are, I've talked to so many people this year, I think all of us have. They're just so disillusioned with, when I worked at a big tech company, it was considered to be, like a cuddly, cool place where they're saving the world. And now it's just like these motherfuckers are just evil. Like they're doing really terrible stuff. Anyway, I think enough people, not only because of their beliefs and their values, but because they frankly don't have any options, they're starting their own companies, co-ops, whether or not, they're going to define themselves as co-ops, but people are just going to be doing their own thing more and more because they don't have any other alternatives. There's no other option because the job market's terrible. I think we're going to see a lot more layoffs, not because the tech industry, they're just going to keep making more and more money and more profits because that's just where they're at. There's 10 companies in the world that basically make the vast majority of all, quote unquote, all the money. So if you can carve out a space for yourself where you can earn a living but not have to participate in that, I think we're going to be seeing a lot more of that. That's my feeling on it, but I don't know what you guys think. So, well, I know what you think, but what you want to add to that.
Yeah, that's the goal, and that's what I would encourage everybody to do if they're in, if they find themselves in that position. Find a little slice of happiness that you can make a living and have an actual good work-life balance despite what other big companies tell you to have. The only struggle there real is the health insurance in this country, in the US. It's like it's very It's a major, major, major expense if you decide to pull it off. If you can do it, great. But yeah, that's so. I mean, I think that's going to be the one of the biggest deterrents for stuff like that. But the benefits of actually having something that you call your own and can check out at 2 o'clock in the afternoon because your kid's got something like a baseball game or a concert or whatever, you could just do that. Right. That is the true goal.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's going to be obviously a trend for, yeah, because a lot of people are going to either voluntarily or involuntarily, they're going to be leaving these large corporations. And so it's even if you go find, a small company to go work for or start your own, it's the questions are always like, how do you structure it? How should it work in terms of who makes the choices and things like that? And so I think people will be exploring co-ops more just to kind of get and because I think in the past it was always like, well, if you go start your own company, then you've got to set it up as an LLC or a C corp or whatever, and so you run into the same issues that the big companies have. But there always have been alternatives that just haven't been shared widely. So I think people are finding out more about them and kind of interested in them. I think even if you do end up sticking at a medium to large size company, I think we're probably going to see a trend towards collective bargaining, unionizing inside of these kind of companies as well, because nobody's really been taking care of the workers, right? Like the workers are supposed to take care of themselves, but as individuals, your power is really, really limited. But if you can get everybody in the office, everybody in the company to come together to represent your interests, that's gonna be good for you individually in the long term, but also for everybody else as well. So yeah, so it wouldn't surprise me if 2026, one, we see a sort of increase in the number of small companies that may or may not be co-op kind of structured, but also inside of the larger companies if we see more talk about unionizing and sort of doing a lot of that stuff as well.
Yeah, and the fact that we are talking about that has shed light on the fact that being, and even the term itself, a tech worker, like 10 years ago, that term didn't even exist. Like, if you were a software engineer and you worked in tech, like you were almost like a unicorn. Like, that was a very special job. Like, you had to be skilled. Like, not that people aren't skilled now, but initially skilled at it. A lot of took a lot of patience, a lot of a lot of stuff. But then over time, I think now tech workers are sort of like in the same bucket as skilled labor, manufacturing, all of that. You're not this special person anymore that you can just be replaced by somebody else who would just do it for a little bit less. And I think the more people that start to realize that eventuality, the more you can start to like protect yourself. When you mentioned like Union, there's a really good book that was out there. I haven't read it yet, but I've read a few of his other books. Ethan Marcotte wrote a book called "You Deserve a Tech Union." So I would recommend you definitely pick up that book.
Yeah, we'll link to it in the show notes. Yeah, I mean, this is the new working class. Like, it doesn't, their wages, their salary, whatever you want to call it, their compensation is either going to freeze or start to decline. But regardless of how much money you make, like, if you're a highly paid tech worker, the way your employer treats you, you are definitely now treated more like a quote unquote worker. Then, like you said, Blaine, like when we were all involved in the heyday of big tech companies where you're like we're considered these kind of white collar special elite whatever we were, like that doesn't really exist anymore. Again, that doesn't mean you can't make a lot of money, but you can be flushed out of there. You know, you can go from making $500,000 a year to being unemployed, and they just do not care. Like they might give you some severance or something, but like the days when you could just bounce to some, you know, well, then I'll just go work at Amazon and make $500,000 a year, that, or whatever. That just doesn't work any, it doesn't exist anymore. I don't think so. I mean, there's always going to be some people who can do that. You know, Facebook's hiring some AI guy for $1 billion, whatever. That stuff will always go on, but the kind of rank and file where you could just go from, you know. I grew up in a place that back in the day was all steel mills and coal mines, and I grew up with mostly men because that's who it was at the time telling me the stories about how, well, yeah, I worked at, you know, Bethlehem Steel, but then I could get 50 cents an hour more at Conemaugh Steel, and so I just bounced and went to, you know, that's how it worked until it all fell apart. And they were strongly unionized back then. That, you know, that's the other thing is once Reagan showed up and started busting unions, that whole way of life just sort of just disintegrated. I mean, I saw it happen. I grew up in a place where, you know, unemployment was 25, 30%. So I see that happening with tech. Like you can't just go get another job tomorrow because you're highly skilled at this thing that not a lot of other people can do. AI is a whole other aspect of it that I don't know how much we want to get into, but not that it's any, this is what I keep saying is AI is not going to do your job better, but if it can do your job okay, that's all a tech company cares about. I think they believe it's just going to keep getting quote unquote better. So yeah, it might, and it's so crazy that you can go to a product that you pay for, and like one of the cautions that the product gives you is like, hey, by the way, a lot of what I tell you might not be true, but you know, whatever, you're still gonna pay me for it.
One like sliver of hope, and I remember this like almost like 10 years ago, maybe at this point, where there was a lot of very popular like open source folks making tools and stuff for us, and then all of a sudden these folks would like quit tech and then like go start a farm, right? Like that was like, oh wow, like that was like newsworthy stories, right? And everybody heard about it. But the amount of people that are doing that now, is kind of crazy. I worked with a guy a few companies ago. He worked at a very large game publisher, and now he's running a demolition company. He bought a tractor, he bought a tractor, he got a truck, and now he goes around and demos sites before constructions. He's
Wow.
completely quit tech and now does this for a living and probably makes, maybe a little bit less than he used to. You know, small local company just doing demo stuff. And the thing is with software folks, it's like, we always want to do the software thing and build the thing, but like what we really all are deep down, we just problem solve. Right? So at the end of the day, like if software's not doing, software's a means to an end. You're problem solving and your tool is software. You can go problem solve something else. You're all like smart enough people to go and figure that out. So if software's not doing it for you anymore, go solve a different problem in a different space and enjoy your life. But, attempt to run it as a co-op, baby.
Let's we're all for just to be clear, everything should be a co-op. No, I'm just kidding. Not everything. Most things should be a co-op.
I think that to me though, that to me though is like the biggest change that I've seen while I've been working at least, and I've been working a little while, but I think the pay disparity or the total reward disparity has gotten wider over the last 20 or 30 years. So the early days in tech, yes, the Bill Gates, Steve Jobs of the world, when Apple went public and Microsoft went public, made a lot of money. But there was a lot of people that worked at Microsoft and Apple that also got really, really wealthy as well. These days, yeah, you still get like the CFOs and the CTOs and the people who run marketing and sales for these companies get really rich as well. But as you as they've hired more people, the people who are doing the majority of the work aren't getting wealthy to the same rate as the people up at the top. And I think that to me is like the biggest shift that's happened. And I think that's part of the issue here is I'm all for working hard. I'm all for like putting effort in, but you're taking a risk by joining an early stage startup, early small company. When that company succeeds, you should be sharing in the rewards as well. And I don't think people are. And I think that to me is the biggest. That's my big hesitation now towards like joining another startup and stuff. I'm like, yeah, I'm gonna work. Everybody's on, social media, like they're promoting the whole 9-6-6 now, whatever the heck that is, where you work six, you work 6 days a week from, yeah. And I'm just like, no, yes, if I own the company. No, if I'm just an employee who's not gonna get rewarded on the upside. And then the other thing I just want to mention with the AI stuff, I mean, I like the potential for AI is there, and long term, I think it's still gonna there's still amazing things that can come of sort of AI as long as we apply it correctly. I think what's happening now with AI, I mean, a lot of people are just scapegoating it essentially in terms of, oh, we've seen these massive productivity increases with AI. That's why we're not hiring. That's why we're laying people off. I think that's complete crap. They're just laying off people because they want to cut expenses as much as they can and make as much money for their shareholders as they can. And so AI, like I said, there's lots of potential there. There's lots of upside in terms of what it can do and how we can apply it, but we're still a long way from that. And if you believe the sort of talk from the big companies as that's why they're not hiring or that's why they're laying people off, I would not believe that at all.
No, I don't either. I mean, there are, finance companies are starting to use it to replace researchers or analysts. But again, like until you have enough, and I read an article about this a few weeks ago, like, so, the AI does all the research and the this and that, and then you got to pay humans to check the AI's work because, in other words, it is making things less productive because, like, oh, cool, in 5 seconds it created this research report about all this stuff. It's like, well, yeah, but it also said that some of the stuff that it, quote unquote, generates is not true. So we better have somebody check this out because we don't want to release a research report and get, sued because the shit in it isn't true. And I'm with you. Like, yeah, long term, there are things it's going to do that will be great. It's already done things like protein folding or all, but like, I also don't buy the fact that it's magically replacing a software engineer with, 15 years experience doing assembly coding or whatever. I don't, not yet. Maybe someday, but yeah, I think they just see a opportunity to cut workforce and boost profits by whatever, and it's a much better story, especially given how much they're investing in AI. If the story is, the reason we laid off 20,000 people is because AI, that serves every end that they're pursuing. So.
And this was it was an inevitability too, because at those companies of that size, like, they're using the AI to make sure that Jira tickets move from columns faster. That
Yeah.
we've worked in this industry long enough to understand that the folks and the managers at the top, like, value work as output, lines written, all that stuff. We've seen these tools and counters and stats and analytics around results, quantifiable results of all of it. How fast did the tickets get closed? Why? What's your burn down chart? What's this? What's that? What's that? It's like, yeah, but at the end of the day, the software engineers have always been just problem solvers with a means to an end. And so they're trying to replace the mechanics of that person, and not the reasoning and understanding of the person, which they're going to lose, and they haven't really, they'll find that out soon enough.
All right, so moving on to 26 and what we're going to do. We're going to continue, working with the worker ownership and co-op movements, all that good stuff. But in terms of what we want to build, because we do want to keep building products, eventually we want to make all of our revenue from products. I think for me, there's two themes. There's the open social, I don't even want to call it social networking anymore. It's just open social, kind of everything, owning your own data, digital ownership versus, digital quote renting. So, now when you pay for a SaaS service, you're basically you're renting something. You don't own it. Like, if you're paying to host your website on whatever, pick any platform, you're paying them $10 a month to rent some space, to put your files there. What we want to build is a platform where everybody who owns the platform owns, literally everybody who uses it owns it. So if you host your website on this platform that we want to build, the whole thing is a co-op. So if you're paying $10 a month to host things on there, you're paying $10 a month. You actually own shares in the co-op. So, digital ownership is, we want that to be a literal thing. You literally own the infrastructure, the whatever is enabling, your digital presence, eventually doing things like email, who knows what, but to just get the thing started and, bootstrapped and stand up something. We want to start with just simple hosting to prove out kind of the model and get the operating agreement written and all the kind of bylaws, all the stuff that goes into starting a co-op. That's the one piece. And then the open social piece, we want to build, at least I want to build some AT protocol, either products that are based on it or use it in some way, or because it's, I don't know, I just think it's a really interesting technology that is getting traction, and we're obviously involved in it already with things we're doing with the Blue Sky Directory and everything else. But so anyway, those are the two themes for me. I don't know what else you guys want to add there.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I'm excited about the app protocol, AT protocol stuff. I think it's, as we've alluded to, it's not just about social networking anymore. Like, it's not just a replacement for Twitter or X or Facebook or one of those things. It's really changing where and how the information that you generate, create, interact with is stored, and who controls access to it, things like that. And so I think that's interesting. And I think for me at least, I'd like to get away from like let's you know, because I think a lot of what we've well, not just we, but the sort of ecosystem has done is like let's recreate Twitter in an open social way. I'd like to think at least in 2026, I'd like to just start imagining what we want the future to look like and then implementing it.
Yeah.
And I think that to me is really interesting. And I think one of the things that kind of really drew me to App Protocol was that it's permissionless in a lot of ways. So you don't need API keys from anybody. You don't need to get permission to build something. The protocol is standard and it's up to you how you want to use it. And so I think that's gonna be interesting. Is I think we can start to build some very, very cool software that wasn't even possible until we had the protocol layer, and the protocol layer has some stability and some heft to it now that it's really opening up those possibilities as well. And from the co-op side, like I'm just excited because I think like we've said, we think it's gonna be, I think it's going to be a year where there's a lot of interest in it from society as a whole. And so what, since we've been around it for a while now, you know, however we can support the people who are investigating it, starting their own co-ops and things like that, I think that's going to be a really interesting thing just to see how we can help other people with advice, but also with tools and software that they might need as well.
Yeah, and that's one of the well, it's been one of our original goals when we started LimeLeaf in the beginning is like we want the co-op and the nonprofit and the public benefit like space, whether it's small government or anything like that. Like traditionally, the software that you interact with when it comes to those organizations is just kind of terrible sometimes. It's just like it's not up to par with what you expect because you're so used to using Gmail, and then you gotta go and talk with a local organization that's doing some maybe medical waiver, and you need to log into this portal to download a secure document, and it's just terrible. So, like, using sort of our superpowers of stuff that we've learned over the past, 30 years that each of us have been working in this industry, like, can we make these tools over time in a way that, folks are used to using, secure, stable, the UX is good, the UI is good. We can't build everything overnight, but we're sort of trying to pick and choose. And now that we've been a little has spent a little bit more time in the co-op space in general, and we've all come from like cloud computing and cloud software, that's why John sort of brought up the hosting co-op. It's like, well, yeah, anybody can buy and rent a VM from some from provider, whether it's Linode or a place down the street or something like that. But what does it mean organizationally? Like, can you run a tech hosting co-op where the customers actually have a say in the hosting platform? If, for instance, if you sign up for a host, and then all of a sudden 3 weeks later you get an email that they're adding AI to it. It's like, well, you didn't get to decide that. Well, maybe this version of a hosting company, you actually do get a vote. Like, does everybody vote to add AI? No? Okay, then we won't. Your hosting stays the same, or you vote on a feature that gets added, or so on and so forth. At the end of the day, yeah, the host and the machine has to be somewhere else. It's not like we're going to be building a building and putting racks and buying hardware. Like, that's a lofty, lofty first step. Maybe
Someday,
someday,
someday.
maybe that would be nice, right? If you can, if there's a co-op, like a farmer's market, or a vegetable co-op, you own everything, down to the bare metal. Yeah, but we got to start somewhere. And so, for a lot of the stuff, the tech is not the hard part. It's the business model and the transparency that's going to be the more challenging part, to make sure that we are fair and open.
The seven principles that we adhere to as a co-op will be embodied in this as well. It's just how, luckily, there are structures. There's start.coop. There's places that have templates, and there's resources that we'll be able to use to set this up. But yeah, it's it, As all human organizations, the tricky part is always building consensus, getting people to participate actively. Like, the tech is relatively easy. It's all stuff we've built before. We know how to build it like we did with Applied to operate very inexpensively. So the pricing, for this will be very competitive. But yeah, it's going to take a lot more time to get all of the organizational stuff set up than I think to just literally build the technology. So, but we're excited. I'm excited. I think, in 2026, we'll have something at least to start, getting people to kind of help us test it. Not only testing the tech, but there's a lot of people out there that know a lot about running co-ops, a lot more than we do, because we've only been doing it for 2 years. They've been doing it for a long time. So getting their advice and input. I've already talked to, some people that are interested in participating. And so yeah, I think it's going to be cool. All right, anything else we want to cover? It's
No, I think we hit everything.
yeah, all good.
All right, well, thank you guys for everything you've done this year. I think this is, 24, obviously we were getting started. We were just trying to figure out what the hell we were doing. 25, a lot of cool stuff has happened. Two of us are, earning a living working here. The other two will get there eventually. All right. Well, that's it for another Limeleaf podcast episode. We hope you enjoyed it. See the show notes for links to things we mentioned in this episode. As we mentioned, we own and operate blueskydirectory.com. You can advertise there. That's one of the ways that we support the site. These ads are non-intrusive. They respect user privacy and reach hundreds of thousands of passionate Blue Sky users a month. Visit blueskydirectory.com/advertise to learn more. You can also sponsor an issue of our newsletter if you want. All of that is on the website. If you'd like to get in touch with us, we're available on Blue Sky, Mastodon, Open Collective, LinkedIn. There's all those things are on limeleaf.coop. You can find links to contact us or just learn more about us. If you want to give us some money, we'll take it. You can do that also at Open Collective. Just go to opencollective.com/limeleaf. Limeleaf is a worker-owned cooperative. If you are interested in starting your own tech co-op, start.coop is a great place to start. Thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll see you in 2026.
Thanks, everyone.
See you later.